Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, hello, hello. Today, my wonderful audience, those folks that keep me going on a day like today, when I've had one legal deadline upon another, people wanting things by 4 o'clock. But guess what 4 o'clock is? It's my radio show with you. So I can take a deep breath, be glad I could tell them I'm sorry. It's zero service to the legal school right now, to the legal department or whatever. So I'm glad to be with you. I'm decompressing because today my wonderful audience becomes my guest. You are my guest today. It's that, free call-in day. Talk about anything you want. I'll give you some hints. Ask me some questions. Give me some opinions. Take over the show. Not entirely, but, really lend yourself to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour today. And remember to call in, not to listen. To call in, and that can only be done 4 to 5 p.m. Folks are trying at different hours. You make the people at PRN tear their hair out. So the call in is only 4 to 5 p.m. on Wednesdays. You call in at 888-874-4888. Let me clear my throat, and I'll give you that again. Call in at 888-874-4888. And tell Alex, who's usually there, what you'd like to talk about. But to listen, you go to prn.fm. And to get the archives, shows going back with some of the great people in psychiatric reform, cutting edge of research, there you go to breggin.com. And you can find your way. Just look up at the left-hand top of the page, and you'll see a reference to my radio show. And that'll take you to... guess where? My archives. Lots going on. Lots of very exciting things going on from this end of the world, which I will be keeping up with you. A whole new organization I'm doing in collaboration with other people. An organization that brings together the best organizations, the most clearly devoted to critiques of biological psychiatry and presentations of more caring, empathic approaches to helping people. My wife just walked in, guys, so she won't come on the show, but I can check with her, and she's got a legal item for me to deliver, and is taken over and is gone. The show is really, it's such an oasis for me in the week. It really is an oasis for me in the week. Colin, I'll tell you, a couple of subjects I'd like to hear from you about. You can start thinking about it and start thinking about calling in. One of them is love. We don't get to talk about love enough. I think that love is what keeps human beings sane. Now, if you go back and you look at the history of psychiatry, well, not really psychiatry, but Freud, who was psychoanalysis, never was a psychiatrist. He thought the love was a narcissistic extension of ourselves that ruined our ego and unleashed the id. And needless to say, he was not a happy man with that viewpoint. But somebody I really admire even much more than Freud in some ways, William James, he thought that love was a madness. A monomaniacal mania. And you'll find this a lot out there in the world. Does that mean these people were crazy? Because I think love is the antidote to craziness. No, it doesn't mean anything like that. It doesn't mean you're losing complete touch with reality. But it means you're out of touch with the better reality. you're out of touch with the ideal reality. You're out of touch with what I call love and what I define as joyful awareness. I define love as joyful awareness. Love of a woman or a man or a child. Many people, especially growing up, I mean, they love their dog, their cat, their pets, a tree out in the back that they sit in, a cozy corner where they can get away. That's what they invest with their feelings of joyful awareness and look forward to. Many people connect to artwork, to music, to their own music in a joyful way. Many, many people throughout the world connect to God, feel joyfully aware of a higher presence, a greater being, and feel that that being's aware of them, many people, in a joyful way. That's an important way of connecting to the world. I'd be very interested in having folks call in and talk about love with me if you want. But you can talk about something else. The first caller wants to talk about medication withdrawal, and we will honor that. And I'll respond to that call soon. And we're getting lots of calls. Not so far on what I want, but I'll take your callers. I want all of you. But I just want to see if we can get some other kinds of dialogues going here. Another dialogue is personal responsibility. I think personal responsibility is a key to life. Being willing to say, no matter what's been done to me, what's happened to me, what I've been given, I am going to take charge of what I have, of who I am, of what I can become. If personal responsibility is a word that you've been hurt by your parents or somebody else, then think of it as self-determination. Think of it as self-determination. Other things I'd like to talk about are children. Should any children ever be given psychiatric drugs? So I've given you some stuff to think about, and I deal with all of these issues in my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. It's my most recent book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and it's really about overcoming guilt, shame, and anxiety with love and with ethics and with reason, and that's what life is about. It's about overcoming negative legacy emotions, overcoming the guilt we inherit from biology, the guilt we inherit from our social lives and from social evolution, because those capacities also come biologically and socially through evolution and then through the family. So if you're wondering why you have trouble being self-determined, why you have trouble loving, a lot of it actually comes from our evolution, which wanted to contain us, to make us work in the community without necessarily thinking. But so does love. Love comes out of our evolution. So does personal responsibility. But unfortunately, so do the negative legacy emotions that are meant to confine us and make us postpone self-interest without relying on reason and love. Well, I want to replace it all with reason and love. So that's the book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. I'm glad we're getting lots of calls, and it's just been marvelous as we've gone from being largely a talk show with other people, guests, to being a combination guests, and sometimes once a month, the last week of the month on Wednesdays, going to try to stay consistently with taking callers. Let me honor Diane from Canada, the first caller. And Diane, let's see how smoothly Alex gets it done. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Bragan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Your books, I have read every single one of them, among other books as well, but yours by far are excellent. The Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, I read it twice. The Toxic Psychiatry and How to Withdraw from Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, I read those 2-3 times. I've helped my son successfully withdraw from a cocktail of medications the first time using your book. When he was in the hospital after staying up a week, he went back in the hospital. I went out and bought several copies of your book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. I handed them out to every parent in that mental health ward, in the psychiatric ward. I was kicked out 3 times. I had 3 psychiatrists told me they don't want my book, they don't want me talking to patients. And since then, I've received calls from parents thanking me. They had never heard of your book. And now I believe they probably listen to your radio station. They go online, and they, too, are trying to help their children. My question is basically, I agree
but,
with
but
you.
Before your question, thank you, thank you, thank you. If I had an applause thing here, you know, this is just my two hands.
Oh, you're the one that needs the applause. Without your books and your brilliance of your psychiatric background and your intelligence, and I mean, the guilt, shame, and anxiety just tops off all your books, because love, to me, is the most important. I will say that I do have a faith. I do believe in God. That faith I share with my son. And love and empathy and kindness and compassion has basically won him over. He knows he is unconditionally loved. And he recently said to me, I never used to believe in a God, but watching you as a mother has made me realize that atheism is selfish. There must be a God. There must be. And I feel so loved and supported by you. I'm determined to do this.
Oh, Diane, this is wonderful. I want to really spend a little time with you talking about this. And let me remind people, including you, that you can get in touch with me and I will read your email. And it's dedicated for this show only, and it's BreganLive@hotmail.com. Real easy to remember. You can email me, and Diane, follow up with an email, would you, if you haven't already, BreganLive@hotmail.com. That's a wonderful story. Let me say for the listeners, I mean, we've never met, have we? And I certainly... This is such a wonderful call. I want to make clear this is not something I knew about. I'm just very glad to have you on and talking about these things.
Well, thank you. I mean, he's back on medication, and now he's determined. In Canada, unfortunately, we do not have psychiatrists or medical doctors that will help a patient reduce their medication. It is a huge push to keep them on the medication. I'm just an ordinary mom, and I have 3 children. I unconditionally love all my children. Two of my children are in Christian universities, doing very, very well. And my son is slowly coming around to realizing, after looking at your YouTube videos and your online site, and he's starting to read. He started to read your Toxic Psychiatry. He had no idea of the history. Being 60 years of age, I've lived long enough to have watched, I believe it was Jack Nicholson that did that movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, even Robert Whittaker in his book, Anatomy of an Epidemic, is good for charts to explain to people the long-term outcomes and the damage that neuroleptics, lithium, benzodiazepines, the addiction, all these drugs, to me, if people just read and look online, which is wonderful, the technology opens the door that you can look up any drug anywhere and just read as much as you possibly can. And I find that that certainly is an outlet, because in Canada we don't have that. We don't have psychiatrists like yourself. I wish we did. Nobody can replace you as far as I'm concerned. And your wife sounds wonderful as well. I hope she's doing better since her stroke, I believe.
That was, don't scare people, that was a few years ago, and Ginger had a minor stroke. It affected just the corner of her mouth and a little slurring of speech. Actually, almost no one could see the change except herself and me or hear it. But the doctors, fortunately... were very respectful of her, although
wonderful.
And it did show up on MRI that she'd had a very small stroke, and she has a complete recovery. Thank God for that, a complete recovery. So I didn't want to worry anybody. In fact, since we've gone on our plant-based, almost vegetarian, we still eat a little bit of meat or fish, plant-based whole food diet, our health is now better than it was 10, 15 years ago, quite literally. So, I want everybody to know that Ginger's just doing fine. In fact, she's out right now helping take care of one of these attorneys that just descended on me with an emergency document to be handled shortly before the show today.
Sorry, I didn't mean to mention that. My father has 7 strokes. And I put him on a whole food diet. I put my son on a whole food diet because he's now on Depakote and Inviga, which he's trying to reduce. He's doing this on his own. We're still looking for someone, which we can't find. He feels a little bit unsteady with just me helping him. But he's also on a super vitamin supplement called Empower Plus. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's wonderful. It's an absolutely wonderful supplement, but I am a whole food, natural, everything from the garden. Nobody is, keep everyone as healthy as possible. I helped my mother. I helped my dad. I seem to be a constant caregiver, but that's fine. That's what God wants me to do, so that's what I'll do.
Let me say, Diane, that I don't support any of the supplements. If you're on a real vegetarian diet, you probably need B12. Other than that, I think the focus has to be on real foods. That's what whole foods means. But I'm glad you found something that helps you. I don't endorse any of that. But I think that the whole foods, eating your potatoes and your rice, your carrots and your peas and your cauliflower, if your stomach will handle it, and so on. And I think that's the way to go. And to learn more about that, Pam Popper's been on my show a few times. You can go back and listen to her. And by the way, we have a conference. Let me mention it one more time. Pam Popper and I, you can find this on my website. And I'm so bad on the dates, I have to look it up in my book. But I'm going out to Columbus, Ohio on November 7th, and the conference starts on November 8, 9, and 10. But look it up on my website. You can find it right up at the top in various places. And I'm doing a co-conference with her because I've grown to believe so much in the importance of good, solid eating, and this huge science behind it. Diane, would you let me make another comment? As people are beginning to gather, I get a tremendous amount of support from Christian and other religious groups because, the basis of Christianity, when it is actually applied, is love.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
That's the basic principles when it applied. And of course, it's not always applied. My God, look at the scandals in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But as one friend once taught me, institutions don't reflect principles necessarily at all, or even the principles they were founded on or are supposed to implement. Mm-hmm. And love is and being responsible, love and being ethical, love and being reasonable, that's what makes for the good life. And people have a lot of trouble with it, but more and more I'm finding folks that Christians are, and I'm Jewish, of course, are finding a way to really understand what it means to drug themselves and their children and how it interferes with the basic principles of having a clear, open heart and mind that will enable you to love and to take charge of your life. Diane, let me give it back to you, though.
I was going to ask, the vitamin, the super vitamin, basically helped him realize that his body, I don't take them, he takes them, my son, and they made him realize that he needs to eat properly. The drug, he's ballooned up to 290 pounds. He's exercising every day, and he's on the diet that him and I sat down and worked out for, just healthy living, whole food diet.
And that's marvelous. The weight gain is due to the drug, to the antipsychotic drug you have that he's taking. And, of course, you have to be really careful, and I can't give you any advice about withdrawing on your own. But that's the drug that's causing the ballooning of the weight. Because, folks, when you go on to a whole food diet, if you have any excess weight, it melts without you even trying. I lost 35 pounds within probably too short a time because it just was natural. Do you, have I answered any question? I mean, you said you had a question. I'm not sure if I had a question yet.
I was going to ask, so the Depakote would not put on the weight. I thought with sodium in it, it would put on weight as well.
I think that the main culprit here are the antipsychotic drugs. They just inexorably put weight on.
And
it can be hard to come off even after you stop them.
Yes. Do you know of anyone in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, that a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, I have been looking for almost a year, and it ends up with a,
You know, I've known people in the past. I'm not in touch with anyone. You could check and see at our therapy website, which is different from my professional website, Bregan.com. Our therapy oriented website doesn't give therapy, but it's about therapy, is empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org, and it has a resource center on it. There may be somebody in Canada, and if they're not in near Toronto, maybe you could call them and they know somebody in Toronto, but I don't have anybody, and I can't even vet the people on the website. You know, they're just there because they think they belong there.
Yes.
Well, I wish I did.
He, so far, we're doing all right. He's doing quite well, actually, and he's already lost 10 pounds from starting a month ago.
So that's amazing on those drugs, and he's doing that.
And
he's eating enough. Just make sure he's eating enough.
Yes. Well, thank you again, Dr. Bregan.
Thank you, Diane, and stay in touch. Send me an email so I have your email address, but you know, call back again and let us know. I mean, I like, and I imagine that my listeners like too, to hear from people and how they're continuing to progress. Thanks so much for being on. And let me go now to Daryl, who is in the Bronx, and he wants to talk about depression. Daryl, are you there?
What time did you call? I don't know why I missed this.
Daryl, are you there?
Oh, yes. Dr. Bregan?
Yes. I'm just calling you now.
How are you?
You couldn't believe I called you?
Actually, it's been one of those days, Dr. Bregan, so...
Yeah, I've had one of those days, too. Let's connect and spiritually smooth each other out.
All right. That sounds really good. What I
All right. Why are you calling, Daryl?
What I wanted to ask about is there a connection between depression and air pressure changes? I have a particularly challenging time when the seasons change and also during the full moon period.
Well, I've heard people talk about both the seasons and the full moon period. I don't know of any good, solid research, although I think there is some research out there connecting emotional changes to the effects of the moon and its effects, I guess, on gravity and goodness knows what else. But let me say, I don't think that would tell us anything, because you still have to deal with depression in the same way you would anyway. So let's leave that for a moment's conversation. My impression of the seasons, despite all this talk about seasonal affective disorder, which has been around for decades, and which is they treat with light, you know, reflecting off mirrors and so on, and they treat with drugs. But my experience with the people who seasonally get depressed is it has something to do with either a recurrence, a memory they don't have, or may even have, of an anniversary of something going badly. For example, September is the start of school for folks. How do people feel about the start of school in late August nowadays and in September? How do people feel about the holidays in winter? How do people feel about winter? How do people feel about being shut in winter? How do you feel about spring and summer? What does it mean to you emotionally, spiritually, and what was it like growing up? Because most unaccountable depression is rooted somewhere back a ways with losses and suffering that has to do with that time of year. But I would say mainly, regardless of whether it comes from the emotions associated with this or maybe even from some strange effect in the body that gets you depressed from the moon, we sure don't have any cure for moonbeams. So again, you come back to living a good life, which for me is based on if you want therapy and dealing with issues like guilt, shame, and anxiety, or dealing spiritually with the answers, which are in love, loving relationships that are ethical and that are reasoned on your part, and not letting negative emotions interfere with your being loving and being reasonable and being caring. Relationship is the way to heal. It is awesome, awfully much also the source of suffering. But if we withdraw from relationship when we suffer, then we're missing out on the healing, which is through love, but in responsible relationships. Does that make any sense to you, Daryl? I do want to hear your response.
Yes, totally agreed and understood. And so that's why when the withdrawal comes, I attempt to push through and reach out and be as loving even as I'm not willing to be, understanding that that's the only way that it's going to change is to take total control over the behavior and to do what is right until I want to do what's right.
That's hard, isn't it?
It's grueling in the context that I am so angry at, quote-unquote, injustice. So it gets complicated in that I've learned, A, to meet people where they are, to accept what they understand to be factual. I sort of worked through that part, but there's still, I can see that I still make decisions that aren't in my interest, and that challenge me from being what I could be if I would just chill out and do what's required in a given situation in order to get the desired result.
Daryl, you have just, in a few sentences, summed up the problem of human life. Folks, really listen to what he is saying. Every human being gets overcome with anger, guilt, shame, anxiety. We get numbed. All of us go there. I was struggling with that before the show because here, with very little notice, I have a lawyer telling me he has a document due at 4:15 or 4:30. And, of course, I'm going to be on the radio by then, and I'm going on the radio. And I had to end up calling in my wife to get some help in getting this document that I got notarized, sent off properly. Thank goodness I got her on the cell phone. And I was feeling really angry. And I told the lawyer, you know, please don't do this to me again. But I think I remained gentlemanly. And it was not easy. And I have no reason to believe this man is anything but a good soul. But, you know, it's just so important for us. What I decided is that being angry didn't help. Didn't help me on radio or TV. Ever watch yourself angry on TV or cynical on TV or sneering on TV? I'm going back to the early days, like 45 years ago or whatever, maybe 50. oh my gosh, it could be literally more than 50 years ago. So, you know, look at yourself and look at your face in the mirror and decide, just as Daryl was saying, you know, move toward love, move toward taking responsibility, move toward building relationships. No one said it was hard. And spirituality, where you have a faith, can help a lot. Believing in humanity. I think if you believe, quote, in humanity, you're going to have too much to be angry about. Humanity is a very mixed picture, and we have a history of so little love and so much murder and violence. We seem limited in our ability to love, most of us, to a handful of people nearby, and we know this from evolution. Once you got past a few people nearby, I mean, we've been suspicious and angry and destructive for a long time. So, it's a good call, Darryl. Do you have any more thoughts you want to maybe conclude with or share with before we're done?
Right. Well, what I'm looking for is consciously, I understand all of those things. My challenge is that I believe that subconsciously.
There's a lot of bad noise in the background. Sounds like another phone. It was almost like an airport.
It was a phone off the hook. Subconsciously, I even know what I need to do there. It's getting through that deprogramming process.
Let me give you a hint, because I'm here. One of the things you said was that injustice makes you angry. And it probably makes you feel guilty or anxious or ashamed that you're not doing enough, all that kinds of stuff, right?
Terrified.
Terrified.
Yeah, I'm an African-American male living in the United States of America.
Sure. Sure. Do you want to talk any more about that? Or that's enough to say,
if
you're comfortable?
You know, that's something you just live with, and you then, without belittling what the dangers are, you take into context that all the people that I would honor and glorify have either been killed during my lifetime or killed before my lifetime, including my spiritual leader. So that's
who, can you tell us who that was? Is that all right?
Excuse me?
Who was that, may I ask? Daryl, you can always, any of my listeners, you can always say, no, I don't want to go there, Pete. But can you tell me who your spiritual leader was?
Oh, yeah. I'm a Christian, so I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe that he was a real person. I believe that he did all the things that he said that are recorded in the...
So you're referring back to Jesus being killed.
Right. However, on a more contemporary basis, I'm a member of Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York City, so Adam Clayton Powell was driven to distraction after passing more legislation than any other congressman to this day, and mm-hmm. gets very little credit for that. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, you name them, they tried to do something. Put your head too far up. I was in several war situations. Fortunately, I wasn't in physical combat, but I do consider myself a mass murderer because I worked on aircraft that then went off and killed literally hundreds of people. So I somewhat resolved some of that.
You mean you worked for an aircraft company that made
planes? I was in the Air Force during Vietnam.
Oh my gosh.
And I was in Thailand. Northeast Thailand, when Nixon said we weren't bombing Laos. And you could see what they used to call the heat lightning. The planes would take off, and then 20 minutes later, you'd see all these flashes. So, you know, Hmong tribesmen being abused and disabused, and then being shipped over here and being abused and disabused. So there's a whole lot of stuff, but on the conscious level, I've resolved all of that. But subconsciously, I know that I'm making the decisions that I make because I'm a...
Let me go out on a limb and say something.
Surely.
You probably, for being in Vietnam, have not heard very often, "Thank you for your service."
But I'm
going to say that to you in front of my live audience and anybody else who listens and wants to say, "How can you say that? How can you say that?" Thank you for your service. Well, during the Vietnam War, I was able to get in the United States Health Service because I was a psychiatrist and because I had good credentials. And I spent the Vietnam War in the lap of luxury, being in the United States Public Health Service, assigned to the National Institute of Mental Health. I couldn't have got a better assignment anywhere in the whole world for my career. And that's how I spent the Vietnam War. And I've often thought back on that. I didn't believe in the war. I actually took a big risk back then, Darryl. And I signed a letter that went into the Washington Post as uniformed. I wasn't uniformed, so I don't know if it was uniformed. I could have been uniformed. But people who were in the services. And when I went and got my FBI file decades ago, the only thing they had in it was that I'd signed that declaration against the war. But even though I was against the war, I've often thought back, and I protested the war, and I took risks to protest the war. Maybe it would have been braver to say, but I'm an American, so I'm going. So I want to tell you, thank you for your service. I have no idea what the responses are. Maybe some of you could email me about it. And maybe that'll help a little to have at least one person just let you know that. Let me say a couple of other words. Go ahead, Darryl. Go ahead. Let's continue.
Those of us who weren't in combat, however, were there and saw a lot of the horrors.
You know you were involved with aircraft and bombing missions. So, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, well, I didn't drop the bombs. I just made sure that the platforms were stable enough so that they got where they needed to go.
Yeah. So, all right, but you're saying that you feel you were part of it.
The piece is this, is that with regard to my experience there, even that was pretty bizarre. I mean, I did drug education for Dr. Katz, I'm trying to think of his first name, out of Colorado, who back when the first quote-unquote drug revolution was going on in the United States, we did a lot of groundbreaking psychological work, and especially in the military. However, to anybody who understands the military understands that, A, it's a job like any other job, and B, it's really unpleasant because you're asked to do things that are morally, for the most part, are morally totally corrupt. And unfortunately, because of the age thing or the quote-unquote patriotism thing, you don't find that out until much later. So I was out protesting, and I protested straight through to the 90s, in which I decided that I needed to change how I was protesting. I appreciate the sentiment. However, I appreciate the sentiment. So
okay.
So we both demonstrated and said, and you don't know what demonstrate. You think Apocalypse. Have you ever seen Apocalypse Now?
No, I can't. Well, yeah, I did sort of. I'm sure. Yeah, I hate
right.
violent
well,
movies.
Okay, go back.
They make me feel like I can't do anything about them.
Go back and just take a look at that, and that was more real than what most.
No, I did look at it. Right. I remember the boats going up the river, and I remember that was with Marlon Brando, wasn't it?
Yep, Marlon Brando and Martin Sheen.
Yeah, I saw it. Well, listen, let me make a comment, and then I want to pick up on a couple of other calls. Thank you for the great call.
Thank you.
I decided very early on that I could not maintain an angry stance and continue to live my life effectively, let alone happily.
Right.
And I had to accept that there were so many things out of my control in this world. And furthermore, that I couldn't even be guaranteed that my reform work would be effective. If for all I knew, it might get turned on its head and used to whip things up even more so by the drug companies. You never know the response of abusive organizations to reformers. I've been blessed in being allowed to go this long, such a long time, as a reformer. And I would urge you to really work on, since you believe in God, giving up your anger to God, giving up feeling guilty and ashamed about a world that has always been like this, certainly in the biblical days, and even earlier literature. And just figure out what it is that you would love to do to help make this world a better place. Because as the horror of the world is an invitation for all of us to do some good in it, it means we are never worthless or useless because there's always so much for us to do. So let me leave you with that, if I may, okay? And call back anytime, all right?
Thank you, Dr. Bregman. Thank you.
Okay, let me go to Catherine, who's been hanging on a while, St. Louis, and we'll go to more traditional topics for our show. Catherine, hi, you there?
Well, hello, Dr. Bregman. How are you?
How'd you do hanging on so long?
Because you're well worth it.
Okay. And you weren't the one to hang on the long. I got one other person I promised to get to in a few minutes who's been on a long time. So, Sandy, I'll get to you, too. So tell
me,
Catherine, what you calling about?
I am calling about the medications prescribed to me by my psychiatrist. And the list is unbelievable. And you and I actually spoke about 2 years ago. I had the strength then.
How did we speak 2 years ago? Were you did you call in? I wasn't taking callers often 2 years ago.
No, I emailed you. I emailed you several times, and you found my case very interesting that you took the time out in your busy schedule to call me, which
that
meant
is very unusual. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Was I helpful? Honestly.
Well,
because I mean, I don't know how to be helpful long distance often.
It's very difficult, and I'm still in a predicament that I am in because my soul has been broken.
Well, how can I help you? Because I believe the soul can't be broken. The brain can be injured. The soul cannot be broken. I believe that there is something about us eternal, something about us untouchable, but the communications can be impaired, the knowing of self can be impaired. So maybe one way I could help you would be to say, do not let these drugs push you to that awful place where your soul can be broken. Just tell them, no, my soul's not broken. And your soul, the center of the soul is love. Engagement, caring about other people, caring about the world, caring enough to call me.
Yes.
Is there somebody you could talk to and get some encouragement, relationship from? And is there somebody you could get guidance from in regard to the medication?
Well, I've got to be honest with you. My family, when they look at me, they see, kind of the sins of what has happened. May I just list a few of my medications that I've been on, as well as 13 ECT treatments in 1 month?
When did you have the 13 ECT in 1 month?
When was
that?
2012.
And let's just talk about that for a minute. How are you doing in recovering from that?
Terrible. There are years I don't remember. To this day, I get lost on directions. I can't even do a simple math problem. I have problem even writing a simple word correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just my brain feels like scrambled eggs.
Well, I believe you. And ECT can do all kinds of really bad things. And often there's a slow, imperceptible recovery, but it And sometimes people have rapid recoveries. It just varies a lot, but I would not want to have 13 ECT in a month. And now you're on a lot of drugs, and you have been for a while?
Yes, I have. And from those drugs, I have tardive dyskinesia. If I can just list a few of these real quickly, because I know your time is limited. I was on Risperdal, Zyprexa, Giardin, Vyvanse, Remeron, Fituda, Seroquel, Topramate, Safras, Lamictal, Adderall, Ambien, Gabapentin.
Well, and you're getting across. There's at least four antipsychotic drugs in that group, so that's where you got the tardive dyskinesia from.
Yes.
And what are you on now?
I am currently on Seroquel, Lamictal, Diazepam, Gabapentin, and Ambien.
Well, if I were on all those drugs, it would be very hard for me to do this radio show, if not impossible. The drug that is most likely to aggravate the tardive dyskinesia is Seroquel. The others are not particularly going to do that. So in terms of your tardive dyskinesia, you should talk to your doctor about the Seroquel. And it would be wonderful if you could find a therapist or someone else to relate to who maybe then could go back and work with your doctors about reducing some of these meds. But the one about your tardive dyskinesia will be the Seroquel, and you may not be able to stop it abruptly. If you've been on it a while, you might need to go slowly. But that would be the one I'd ask him about or her about. And think about reversing this idea that your soul has been injured. I understand it feels that way. I have felt like that myself. But keep in mind a center that is you, that I believe is God-given, and try to revive that with family. Maybe tell family, you know, I really have been a problem because I've been really injured. My brain doesn't work as well, but I'd like to have some comfort and some care with everybody, and try work with all your might to make yourself somebody who can receive some care and comfort. Really try hard. It's very hard with all the drugs, though. Very, very hard.
Yes. I want to end now.
This is a meaningful call. Every call has been so meaningful. This is an ideal show to me, folks. Really glad to be hearing from all of you. But let me go on to the next person, and let me just leave you with that thought that just find within you that part of you that knows how to be loving and caring, and see if you can work with a family member or a friend or in some way a therapist, if you could just find a therapist to relate to, and see if you can cut back maybe with working with your doc with that Seroquel. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye now. Well, we have more than I can probably answer today. I think I promised somebody in all of this, Sandy, that I'd get back to her. And I don't think I've talked to Sandy yet. Sandy, you there?
Yeah, hi. Thank you. The last show you said something wonderful. You said the elixir of life is love. And you said it with such profound caring and love. It reminds me of Armand DeMille, which is a man that I went to so many years ago because I was in terrible trouble. I was very, very suicidal. And I worked with kids for many years, and I really had to fight in the school system to keep them off of drugs. And I worked with the parents, and I had to win over the parents to the idea that they didn't have to drug their kids, that we could work with them. And in the conventional classroom, you know, now it's just too easy to say, oh, the kid needs meds, you know, let's throw them out there. And I had seen for too long kids, you know, which is what the woman was just talking about, who seems to be in so much pain. the tardive dyskinesia, and I saw these kids that were isolated. The other kids avoided them. The other kids didn't want to be around them. They would make fun of them. You know, and I said, oh, my God, you know, no way, no more kids. So I want to tell you that in almost 40 years of teaching, not a single kid has ever gone into drugs that was my student. And I really, how shall I say this, had to fight off other teachers, you know, who would see a kid laying over the desk or, you know, laying on the floor with their feet up and reading a book. And I thought it was okay. They were reading the darn book, for heaven's sake, and they were having a good time. Leave them alone. You know, let's do other things, you know, if we want to calm them down. So, but your elixir of love is very much on, because I believe that at the root of many, many of our problems, too many, is a lack of love, not only for our children, but for each other in relationships. There seems to be too much readiness to throw away, you know, this issue of love, or that it's lame, or that it's stupid, or it's weak, or what do you mean I gotta love my student? You know, people would say it. I mean, I said, you gotta love them. It's like your own kid at home. If you don't love your students, you can't teach them, you know? And I got it. You know, I got it long, long time ago, thank God. And so I want to thank you for having asked me to call back today. And you said, I like this. And I tell you, I believe that, yeah, we've thrown out that beautiful love, and now we're in real big trouble with kids, yes, that are a wreck, you know, adults that are a wreck, because actually there is no one who really loves them and says, you know what, I can't do this to this person. Let me take care of them.
Oh, wow. What a lovely call in. You know, it is just so important for all of us in our audience who are now my guests today to be talking not just about the problems, but about the answers and the solutions. And I believe there's a great wave developing of people who are realizing that not only are psychiatric drugs so harmful, they're neurotoxins. Go read my blog, which you can get to from my website. And it's on Mad in America. You can find it there, you know, about these drugs being neurotoxins. That's the most accurate scientific name for a psychiatric drug, is neurotoxin. And neurotoxins interfere with our capacities to love and to take charge of our lives. They take the finest tuning and make it hard to tune. So, and Sandy, I'm working on a new book that may come out in months or a year, or who knows, but when you see the phrase in it, elixir, that the elixir of life is love, or love is the, take credit for it, because I'd forgotten I said that. It was sort of lurking around and I couldn't grab it in my memory. And it's going to go into my next book, if not my soon blog, maybe. So, thank you for that. Thank you for being a guest. And, I want to tell other folks that, again, the way to email me is for the show, which is where I personally look at emails. Can't answer the great majority. I won't be able to answer, but I'll hear you. I'll see what you're saying. I'll learn from it. And it's Bregan Live. Isn't that nice? Bregan Live at hotmail.com.
I like that.
Yeah. It just came okay. to me and my wife, and we got it up. So thanks a lot. And let me go and take my last call, but it's going to be a short one.
Thank you.
In Oklahoma. Let's go to Mary in Oklahoma. Are you there? Mary?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Hi. I can hear you. You seem to be breaking up, but just start talking.
Okay. I've met you at Syracuse and Michigan and Florida.
Oh, my Lord. So you've been going to conferences that I've been involved in.
Yes. And I just heard you talking about taking charge of your life.
Yes.
And I'm detoxing all the time. Today I started a water fast, and then I juiced whole lemons in a centrifugal juicer, and I don't want to drink the lemon juice. It's too, you know, I diluted it, but it's not, you know, very tasty. Anyway.
Let me interrupt, because I don't think that's the way to go. Yeah, the way to go is in the research that came out of the China study. Go look up China study, and there are two men, a father and son, who did it, named Campbell, so you can find them pretty easily. And then more recently, I wouldn't go back to the original China study, go back to the revised edition, or go back to their latest books. One of them is called Whole, W-H-O-L-E, and but just look up the father and son, Campbell, who are writing their books on the China study, and look up my favorite nutritionist with whom I'm, you know, again, you can go online and find where you could meet me and talk to me a lot more, which is going to be in Columbus, Ohio, and look up the dates and look up how to get there. And by the way, if you go there, you'll get Pam's phone number. I don't like giving it on the air, but if you go to the trouble of looking up our conference that's going to be toward the end of November in Columbus, Ohio, you'll find Pam's phone number and email. And she says, email me, and I'll talk to you about how to sign up. I'll help you. So go ahead and do that. And Mary, maybe you can do that.
I have talked to Colin Campbell.
All right. He doesn't recommend water fasts. You get around, by the way, Mary. Go ahead. What are you going
to
say?
Well, because he came to Hallelujah Acres in Shelby, where I lived before I came to Oklahoma. He came there three times, and I had the same area code as Hallelujah Acres, so he answered the phone the first time. And it was all about dairy. You know, dairy's not good for people.
Oh, no dairy. Dairy is terrible for people. I think that we'd reduce asthma, for example, and allergic reactions in general enormously by dairy. And that's science. I'm not giving you imagination here. But also the whole food diet without dairy. And he is not just about dairy. I mean, you read his books, Colin Campbell, and his son, or Pam Popper, and it's so much more than no dairy. It's about what to eat right. And what to eat right, believe it or not, are your vegetables. And there's directions on what vegetables are the best and what are the solid ones to rely on. So go to their books and go to Pam Popper, and also check out Pam Popper's shows here. I'm going to be drawn to the end pretty soon. I want my engineer to tell me how much time I got left. And is there anything you wanted to add before we leave? We got a minute.
I have been to places that don't have stoves for detox.
I'm going to end because I got less than a minute now. Thank you for calling in, Mary. Thank you much. Folks, this is my idea of a really good show with a mix of positive and a mix of the issues people are struggling with. I want to increasingly invite people to call in around these issues. Remember that the last Wednesday of every month, it's call-in time. And I will do my best to get to everybody that calls in. And isn't it wonderful, all the callers we do have, how thoughtful they are, how caring they are. And I wish that life had much easier solutions. But those code words of love and reason, or love and reason and ethics, that's what it's about. And you got to find your way there, because we thrive when we love, and we thrive when we are loved, and we thrive when we are reasonable and take charge of our lives. Thank you, my wonderful audience. Boy, it's being displayed how wonderful you are. Thank you so much for being on the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.